We are in the green cards. If you've got your cards with you, we're in the green cards. It's the books of history cards. We're studying from Joshua through Solomon. That's the breakdown that we have on these cards. So that means once we get through Solomon that we are done with this set of green cards. Doesn't mean we're done with the books of history. Just means that we're done with this set of green cards. We've got a prophet card, the easier questions. Priest card, a little bit harder. King card, they're impossible to learn and you never get there. You'll never get them at all. Wrong. They're just a little harder, but they're a little more challenging for you. Now, remember, there's quizzes for all of this on our website. You can go to the website and just go through and quiz yourself on this. See how you're doing in learning these key facts, key chapters, key locations in these memory verses. So, we are wrapping up this particular card. We're going to be in the book of 1 Kings tonight. So if you look at your prophet card, priest card, king card, we're going to be on the back side, the last section, down where you get your 1 King questions. What is the book of 1 Kings about? Well, let me back up and ask you this. What's the book of 1 Samuel about? You could say Samuel, and that wouldn't be a wrong answer, because Samuel is in there. But which king dominates the stories of the book of 1 Samuel? King Saul. So you got the first king, and that's 1 Samuel, it's Saul. You come to 2 Samuel. What king dominates the stories of 2 Samuel? David. So you got 2 King and 2 Samuel, and that's David. So you come to 1 Kings. 1st, 2nd, 3rd Kings, but it's 1 Kings in our Bible. What king is going to dominate? Over here. This is about Solomon. Except we only read about Solomon for the first 11 chapters of this book and then he dies. So you have the United Kingdom under Saul, United Kingdom under David, United Kingdom under Solomon for 11 chapters in this book. And then you get to the last half of this book and then to 2 Kings. And what are you reading about? This, it's not a United Kingdom anymore, is it? Now you read about a divided kingdom. So, and we'll talk about that more when we get there. But you read about this kingdom being divided. And now that totally changes the whole framework of what's happening in God's plan. But so this is on your priest or your prophet card. This is the easy question on your prophet card. Who is the third king of Israel? That's Solomon. First king is Saul. Second king is David. Third king is Solomon. But before he can become, look in 1 Kings chapter 1. Before he can become king, you know what his older brother did? Anybody have an older brother? I was fortunate. I didn't. I was unfortunate. I had two older sisters. Sorry, Grayson. I mean, it's a tough life, but, you know, only tough men can have two older sisters and survive. But here's an older brother, and he's got a stinking older brother. You know what this stinking older brother Adonijah did? When he says, oh, I'm going to be king. You know, old dad's ready to about ready to kick it anyway. So he's not in king. He's in bed all the time anyway. He can't be king. So I'll just be king. So that's what happens in 1 Kings chapter 1 and verse 5. Adonijah says, hey, you know, if we're looking for volunteers, I'm going to be king. How'd that work out for him? Did he stay king? I mean, do you have anybody got an older brother that would do something like that? Just steal something right out from underneath you. Something that was rightly yours and then, no, you can't have it. I'm going to take it. And so, guess who comes to the rescue? Solomon's mom. Aren't moms great? Solomon's mom comes to the rescue. The prophet Nathan and Bathsheba work up this plan to go before David and say, have you ever cooked up a plan where you say, hey, you say this, and then I'll say this? That's what Nathan did. Nathan said, Bathsheba, you go in there first. You get him warmed up. You say this, and then I'll come in, like we haven't talked about this, and I'll say the same thing. And David will be like, well, of course, if both of you are saying this, this is the way it ought to be. Well, what were they cooking up? Solomon's supposed to be king. So they go before David, and so Nathan and Bathsheba work out this plan, go in, and David says, no, Solomon is going to be king. So how does he decide that we're going to show everybody, Adonijah's not the king, we're going to let everybody know that Solomon is king? There was a sign. There was a sign that everybody would recognize that when they saw this sign, this is the king. What was the sign? Solomon's going to go riding through the city on his dad's mule. So there you go. If you want to be king, get your dad's mule, go ride it through the city. and it's a sign that you are the king. But that's what Adonijah recognized. Adonijah figured it out. Oh no, I'm in trouble because he's riding the mule and I'm not. So Solomon finally is crowned as the king of Israel. And how long did he reign, by the way? 40 years. That's a good answer. How long did David reign? Oh, that's a good answer. How long did Saul reign? Wow, that's really good. How old are you? Oh, okay. Just seeing. I mean, you were on a roll, but you stopped for some reason. Maybe that doesn't apply to you anymore. Go to 1 Kings. I want you to see in 1 Kings chapter 2. I want you to look in 1 Kings chapter 2 at what David says to Solomon before he dies. Here is some really good advice for old man. Oh, he's only 70. You can't say he's old. For wise man David to be saying to his son before he dies. Look at 1 Kings chapter 2. Days of David drew near that he should die. And he charged Solomon his son saying, listen to this. I go the way of all the earth. Son, be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man. Well, that's a good thing to tell sons today, isn't it? Be a man. Prove yourself to be a man. Be strong. Verse 3. And keep the charge of who? The Lord your God. Be strong. Be a man. Keep the charge of the Lord. How do you do that? To walk in His ways, to keep His statutes, His commandments, His judgments, His testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you see the word that? Do this, Solomon. Do what God says. Well, why should I do that, Dad? Why do I have to do what you say to me, Dad? That you may prosper. You want to prosper? You want to grow? That you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn. Verse 4, that, here's the second purpose, that the Lord may fulfill His word which He spoke concerning me, saying, see the conditional term here, if your sons take heed to their way to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, God said, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. David gives these final words of advice to his son. What are they? Do what God says. Do what God says and you will be blessed. What if I don't do what God says? You're not going to have those blessings. And so as you keep reading there in 1 Kings chapter 2, you get down to verse 10, 11, and 12, and David dies, and Solomon is officially the king of Israel. Was Solomon a good king? At the beginning. Did Solomon make good choices? Did he make good decisions? Sometimes he did. Sometimes he didn't. There were some issues with Solomon right from the get-go. Before we get to what he asked the Lord for, remember the Lord gave him a blank check, said fill in the amount, and Solomon could have asked for any. Before we get to that, that's in chapter 3. But before you get there, look in chapter 3 and verse 1. There's some issues with Solomon before God ever asked him what he wants, gives him that blank check. Chapter 3 and verse 1, is this a big deal? Solomon made a treaty with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and Solomon married Pharaoh's daughter. That's just kind of dropped there, and you just keep reading right on through. Is that a big deal? He entered into a treaty with this other king, and he married that king's daughter. Is that a big deal? Well, turn with me back to Exodus chapter 34. Go back to Exodus chapter 34. You're going to have to turn your pages faster now. Go to Exodus chapter 34. Let's start in verse 15. Exodus 34, 15. Lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they play the harlot with their gods and make sacrifice to their gods, and one of them invites you and you eat of his sacrifice. We're going to come back and talk about some of those verses before that, but here's what I want you to see in verse 16. And you take of his daughters for your sons. And his daughters do what? play the harlot with their gods, and make your sons play the harlot with their gods. What in the world is he talking about? If you go into this land and you marry those individuals that are not followers of God, but they are followers of idols, what is that going to cause you to do? You're going to play the harlot. Isn't that graphic language? You're going to play the prostitute. You're going to prostitute yourself against God. By doing what, God? By marrying someone who is not a follower of God. Oh, God, you're such an old fuddy-duddy. Look in Deuteronomy chapter 7. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 7. You fast forward 40 years, right? You fast forward 40 years. You get to Deuteronomy chapter 7. Look in, verse 2 says, don't you get in there and make any covenant with those people. Look in verse 3, Deuteronomy 7 and verse 3. Nor shall you make marriages with them. Don't go into this land and make marriages with foreigners. You shall not give your daughter to their son, nor take their daughter for your son. Well, why not, God? What's the big deal about marrying somebody who's not a follower of God? Verse 4, what's the first word you have in verse 4? No, verse 4, what's the first word you have in verse 4? The verse 4, what's the first word you have in verse 4? Verse 4. 4. You're saying the same word I am. Just seeing if you're listening, all right? What does the word for mean? F-O-R, sorry. I'll be more specific. What does the word F-O-R mean? Here's the reason. Don't marry their daughters. Don't give yourself. Well, why not, God? Verse 4. Here's the reason. They will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. That wouldn't happen. They're not going to go in there and marry these individuals who are not followers of God. God's not going to get angry at them. They're not going to turn away from the Lord, right? Fast forward. 1 Kings chapter 3. What did we see? Solomon married. Well, one's not so bad, right? Go to Nehemiah. You know where Nehemiah is? Go to the book of Job and back up. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther. Go to Nehemiah chapter 13. Nehemiah chapter 13 parallels the closing chapters of the book of Ezra, where God's people had done exactly what God told them not to do. They had married individuals who were not followers of God. Is that a big deal? Look at Nehemiah chapter 13. Look in verse 23. In those days, I also saw Jews who had married women of Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. And half of their children spoke the language of Ashdod and could not speak the language of Judah. What does that mean? They didn't know where they were from. They completely forgot their heritage with the Lord. Why? Because they had married individuals they were not supposed to, married individuals who were not followers of God. Will that change your language? Will that change your habits? If you marry somebody who's not a follower of God, will that cause you to, and that's what's happening to them. Verse 25, so I contended with them and cursed them and struck some of them and pulled out their hair and made them, is this a big deal? Made them swear by God, saying, you shall not give your daughters as wives to their sons, nor take their daughters for your sons of their for your sons or yourselves. Now look at verse 26. Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin by doing these things? Yet among many nations there was no king like him, who is beloved of his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, pagan women caused even Solomon to sin. Wow. Is it a big deal to God who we marry? From Exodus, Deuteronomy, to 1 Kings, about Solomon, to Nehemiah, and seeing how Nehemiah summarizes Solomon and what he did, there were major issues with Solomon from the get-go. But was this his only wife? 1 Kings chapter 3, was that his only wife? Can you imagine? How many wives did he have? How many hundred? Wouldn't 100 be enough? I mean, once you reach 100, you're like, whew, that's a good round number. 100. 700 wives. That's a lot of anniversaries to remember. That's a lot of presents to buy. 300 concubines. Real quick, go back to 1 Kings. Look at this change. Look at this change that takes place. Go back to 1 Kings chapter 3. Oh man, is it all? It can't be that time already. Time's flying too much. Look, real quick, just look at this contrast. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 3. Solomon loved who? So he just began his reign, right? He just began his reign, and Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David. Go to chapter 11. 1 Kings chapter 3 and verse 3, Solomon loved the Lord. 1 Kings chapter 11 begins how? What's the first word you've got in 1 Kings chapter 11? You have the word now? Anybody have the word but? Here's a change. But Solomon loved, now what? Many foreign women. Solomon changed over the course of his time, changed his allegiance. He had loved the Lord. But he started marrying these individuals who were not followers of God, and guess what they did? Exactly what God said was going to happen. They turned his heart away from following the Lord. Go back to chapter 3. What was another issue? That was one issue Solomon had at the beginning. What was another issue that Solomon had at the beginning of his reign? Look in verse 2. Meanwhile, the people sacrificed at the high places. Why were they sacrificing at the high places? Because there was no house built for the name of the Lord until those days. Where were the children of Israel? Where were they supposed to offer their sacrifices? Eventually it'd be at the temple, but that wasn't built yet. So until the temple was built, where were they supposed to offer their sacrifices? They were supposed to offer their sacrifices at the tabernacle. Tabernacle during this time was at Gibeon. But instead of going to Gibeon to offer their sacrifices, they're going to the places where the residents of this land used to have their idols. And that's where they're offering their sacrifices. Guess what God told them to do when they went into the land with all of those places where they had sacrificed? Destroy them. Tear them down. Don't leave them so that you can use them later. Get rid of them. And here's an issue Solomon's got right here at the beginning of his reign that is going to turn God's people away from following him. All right, real quick. We got like a couple minutes here. Real quick, chapter 3. Verse 5 is where God gives him a blank check. Ask, what shall I give you? Whew. If God was going to offer you anything, what would you ask for? I mean, would your mind be running? Ooh, I could ask for this. I could ask for this. I could ask for this. Solomon essentially could have asked for anything. If you notice, what Solomon does is he recognizes the goodness of God. He humbles himself before God. But ultimately, you get down to verse 9, and is this on your priest card? On your prophet card? Asked for what? What did Solomon ask for? He asked for wisdom. Would you ask for wisdom? If God offered you anything, would you ask for wisdom? Why did Solomon ask for wisdom? I've got a big job to do. I'm not smart enough to do this by myself. I need wisdom from God to help me to know how to do this. Here's a humble man, recognizes his insufficiencies in this area. He asks God for wisdom. And when God hears this, what is God's response in verse 10? What did God think about this request? It pleased the Lord. And so what did the Lord... Did the Lord give him wisdom? Sure he did. Did he give him anything else? Riches and honor. That's on your king card, by the way. On your king card, down near the end of your king card, it says, granted by God to Solomon in addition to great wisdom, riches and honor. Isn't that just the nature of God, though? To give you more than you ask for? Do we sometimes limit God? Sometimes we ask God, well, God, this is all, God, if you could just do this. You think God can do more than what you ask? Isn't that what we just studied in Ephesians chapter 3? He's able to do more than you ask or think. Do we trust God? Do we trust God that when we ask Him for something? What does Matthew 6 verse 33 say? Seek ye first kingdom of God and His righteousness and all of these things, the necessities of life. God is going to take care of you. God is going to give you those things that you need in order to serve Him. And so with His great wisdom, one of the first things that Solomon does, and we're going to close with this story at the end of chapter 3, because it's a neat story, isn't it? I don't know. Maybe it's not a neat story to you. So in order to demonstrate His wisdom, at the end of chapter 3, there's two ladies who have sons. And one of these ladies comes and says, I had this newborn child. And then there's this other lady living here. And 3 days later, she had a son. So there's me and her son. We're the only four people in this house. But then her son died. How did her son die? She rolled over on him at night. And her son died. So she woke up in the middle of the night, realized that her son was dead. So what did she do with her son? Whoop, we'll just play a little swapping game here, and I'll just flip my dead son over to you, and I'll take your live son, and I'll go back to bed. So now the first lady wakes up and realizes her child is dead. But then what did she realize? It's not my child. Would you know your baby if it wasn't your baby? She realized, that's not my baby. Where's my baby? She's got my baby. What's wrong with this lady? So she comes before Solomon. What's he going to do to figure this out? If you've tried, be careful with this, David. If you've tried to settle a dispute between two ladies who are not getting along, be careful, David. If you've tried to settle that kind of a dispute, Harrison, when you become a preacher, you've got to be really careful about stuff you say like this. Solomon tries to figure out a solution for this. How are we going to figure out whose baby that? I mean, we're going to do a DNA test? Let's just run a DNA test, right? We'll wait a few thousand years for that to come back and figure out whose baby this is. How are we going to figure out whose baby it is? What does Solomon do? Solomon says, bring me a sword. Can you imagine being one of those mothers? What does he need a sword for? Bring me a sword. All right, we got a sword. All right, cut the baby in half, give half to her, half to her. Solves the problem, right? Everybody get the baby. What did he know? The mother of the living child said, oh, no. Give her my baby. That mother wasn't going to let harm come to her child. And you know the rest of that. Solomon says, give that mother her baby. Solomon, the question you've got on your card, the wisest man who ever lived was Solomon. God gave him, the Bible says, more wisdom than anyone before him or anyone after him. What books in our Bible did Solomon write? You know what book Solomon wrote? Song of Solomon. Good. You got that one. That one wasn't written by David, all right? Wasn't written by Methuselah. That'd be really bad. Song of Methuselah. All right, Song of Solomon, Ecclesiastes, Proverbs. Three books written by a wise man. You want a book on marriage? How about one written by a wise man who figured marriage out with that Shulamite woman? But the Bible says that Solomon wrote 3,000 Proverbs, more than what you've got in your book of Proverbs. Wrote 3,000 Proverbs and 1,005 songs. Pretty wise individual. We will pick up with Solomon next week. We'll pick up with Solomon next Sunday night.